I'm really enjoying this answering of questions. You'll notice the insert. This will be the last time we do it because we're getting quite a few of them, and I won't be able to answer all of them, but if there's kind of a trend of an area that people are asking questions about, I'd like to certainly address that. So if you'd like to fill out this insert, then I'd be glad to preach on a particular topic. I'll just tell you a little bit about my philosophy of preaching. I think it ought to be expository, meaning the Bible should be used by the preacher to explain to people the meaning of any particular given passage. It shouldn't be used to reinforce what the preacher wants to say. And that's a great temptation for all preachers. Oh boy, they need to hear this. So I'm going to tell them this, and I'll find something in the Bible that kind of supports that. And also, I think the bulk of preaching should be through books of the Bible. But that doesn't mean we can't take a break from doing that once in a while, and that's what this series is. We're taking a break from going through a particular book of the Bible just to answer questions that people might have. And today's question deals with God's discipline. The person who asked this question said, I know you've explained discipline as God's training of us, the way a coach would train the members of a team or train the people in the track events, that God does that to us so that we are able to perform. Actually, he does that. This is what discipline is. I'll tell you what discipline is in a minute. The question basically is, how do I recognize that? How do I recognize I'm being trained? Going in through any particular situation, how can I recognize the hand of God in this? How do I know I'm being disciplined? Now, the meaning of discipline is, as I told the children, we have to kind of adjust our mindset when we hear the word discipline. We grew up thinking of discipline as, all right, you're in trouble now, and you got to go to your room, and then when you do whatever, you're out of fellowship with me, and whenever you do whatever you're supposed to do to get back into fellowship with me, then you can come out of your room. And we sort of transfer that to God, and some people just walk a terrible tightrope. Gee, am I being disciplined by God? Is he angry with me? Is he shut me off now? And what do I have to do to get back in good graces with him? Of course, I think the biblical answer to that is we're always in the good graces of God. The sacrifice of Christ puts us forever in the fellowship of God. And we don't jump in and out of fellowship with God. And we don't have to walk that tightrope of, am I in fellowship? Am I out of fellowship? We can rest in the joy of knowing the sacrifice of Christ was so immense that it keeps me forever in the fellowship of this God. It keeps me forever in his love. Because of his love, he does things. He doesn't just watch. He doesn't just wish me well. He does things continually in my life because he is my father, and he's involved in what I do, just like a good father is always involved in the life of his child. He brings me into situations, he brings me into circumstances, he brings me into places where I have to adjust my thinking, even places where I doubt his existence. Why? To produce in me faith, real faith, genuine faith, not faith that I hear the preacher talk about, not faith that I read about in some book, but my own real, genuine faith. The idea of his discipline is to produce in us, just like a football coach wants to produce a certain kind of a team that does certain kinds of things. God wants to produce in us people of genuine, real faith, not secondhand faith. Well, so-and-so says this is what faith is. I guess that what a first-hand faith, where a person can say, I know God. I have experienced God. I know what it's like to go through difficulties. I know what it's even like to doubt his existence. And I know what it's like to come through that with even a greater confidence in him, a genuine, sincere faith. That is really the goal of God's discipline for us. And so to answer that question, I would say, if the question is, and it is, how can I recognize God's discipline in my life? I would suggest this answer. Everything that happens to us is somehow related to God's discipline of us because He's always our Father. He never stops being our Father. He never stops caring about us. He never stops working with us. He never stops training us, which is to say, He never stops lovingly disciplining us. That's not punishment. Punishment was taken care of there. There's no punishment left for us. There is only that loving, I know this isn't going to be comfortable for you, but what it's going to do for you is something more precious than anything else you've got. It's going to refine your faith. It's going to make it genuine. It's going to make it something you can really use. It won't be secondhand. So, why the need for this discipline? It's because the Bible describes that we are in, we're in a struggle. When we become a Christian, all our problems don't go away, and there is an additional problem, which is, I have a struggle within myself. Now, it's described in Galatians chapter 5. Paul writing to the Galatians, in chapter 5, verse 17, he describes this struggle, and he says, for the flesh is what I am without God. Just take God's spirit away from me, and that's what I am. My accomplishments, my character, everything I am, that's my flesh. For the flesh sets its desire against the Spirit. That's the Spirit of God. When I become a believer, the Spirit of God enters my heart, and now I have a struggle that goes on. The Spirit struggles against the flesh. The flesh is my own autonomy. Just leave me alone. Let me live my life. Let me accomplish my particular goals. Let me only operate on my desires. Don't bother me. That's the flesh. The Spirit of God says, you're created by God. He loves you. He's united you with Christ. He has an agenda for your life, for you to walk in faith in Him. And there's a struggle. Will I walk by faith or will I not? Will I live in dependence upon Him or will I try to live autonomously? For the flesh sets its desires against the Spirit and the Spirit against the flesh. For these are in opposition to one another, so that you may not do the things that you please. This struggle in here prevents me from being as good as I'd like to be, and also prevents me from being as bad as the flesh would like to be. When I start going in this direction, the Spirit of God pulls me back. But the flesh that I still have within me, that desire to be autonomous, it sees me going in this direction and it pulls me back here. You say, well, man, what a way to live, huh? With that struggle. Well, he describes it as a struggle so that I can't be fully the Christian I would like to be, nor can I ignore the Spirit of God within me. And if that bothers you and you say, I can't live that way, well, the people in this book lived that way. And this is not heaven. There is coming a time when we will be totally in this direction. We will be totally in praise and honor and dependence and glory of God. But until that time, the Bible describes our life as a struggle between the flesh and the spirit. Even the Apostle Paul, please don't think yourself somehow spiritually developed above this great apostle. Listen to how he describes himself at the end of his life, really. This is 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 15. 1 Timothy 1:15, it says, it is a trustworthy statement, deserving of full acceptance. In other words, I'm telling you the truth, and it would be well if you buy this. It's a trustworthy statement deserving of full acceptance that Jesus Christ came into the world to save sinners. And then he adds this, among whom I am, present tense, I'm foremost. He says, look at the great apostle. He says, I feel like I'm the chief of sin. I feel like I'm the worst of all sinners. He knew what that battle was, and he describes it very well, very minutely, really, in Romans chapter 7. But here he is at the end of his life, having been caught up into the third heaven, having received revelation from God, and he still describes himself. He doesn't say, I used to be this lousy old sinner here, but you know, those days are all gone. He says, not that I used to be the foremost of sinners. He says, I am. Even now, at this stage in my Christian walk, I'm the chief of sinners. I feel like that. So if you ever feel like, boy, I go to church, and, you know, you see those people there, and they're all so happy, and they're also, you know, they talk about God in such a wonderful, wonderful way. My life isn't like that. I wouldn't dare let it be known. But my life is a life of struggle. I find this desire within me to live apart from God and to exercise my own will above His. But if I'm honest, I don't want to go that way. I want to be pulled in the way of God. And so I'm afraid nobody else really has that struggle. Well, all you have to do is open this book and find out that the greatest people of faith had to deal with the flesh and the spirit. God's discipline of us helps move us in the direction of the spirit, helps train us. He doesn't just say, I know you got this battle going on between the flesh and the flesh, lots of luck. He says, I will help you with that. It's like someone who wants to be a wonderful musician. A teacher comes along and says, I'll help you become the kind of a musician you want to be, but it's going to take some practice, and it's going to take some work, and I'm going to put you through some lessons here. That's what God does with us. In everything, He allows into our lives, He is designing that faith become strong in us and become real in us. What is the discipline of the Lord? Everything that He allows into our life to produce in us real faith. Why do we need that? Because we have this battle between will I live by faith or will I not? So He provides us with His discipline to develop a genuine, real faith in us. This is illustrated in the book of Hebrews. We'll go now to Hebrews chapter 12, where in the first three verses, Paul is acknowledging that they have this struggle, the Hebrews. They're thinking about, well, let's just, you know, we're persecuted for our faith. Let's just give up on it. Let's just leave Christ and we will not suffer this persecution anymore. And he's saying, I know you're struggling with that and I know it's a difficult job for you, but it's the discipline that God is working in your life. How do you really know you're a Christian? When somebody says, you don't give up that faith, it's over for you. And you find something you never thought you had. You find yourself believing so strongly in Jesus Christ that you say, my faith is worth more to me than my life. Where did that come from? That was developed by all of the discipline, all of the situations, all of the struggles between the flesh and the spirit. You find, lo and behold, God has refined your faith and made it a perfect kind of faith. And that's what He wants for all of us. I don't want to go repeating myself again. Not a second-hand faith, but a first-hand faith. And so he talks about that in verses 1 through 3. He acknowledges that this struggle exists. Now, in verse 4, he says, now this is to the Hebrews who were struggling. They were being persecuted for their faith. And he says in verse 4, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin. Earlier, he had pointed out that some people actually were tortured and died for their sin. He says, the discipline of God for you hasn't been that severe. So, you know, you're not, whatever it is you're going through, it's not to the level or the degree or the severity that other people have gone through. So he's just trying to encourage them that this discipline has a purpose and it's not as bad as it could be. And look at verse 5. You've forgotten, because you're so upset about this persecution, about why God doesn't alleviate it, about the discipline of God. He says, you've forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. Now this is from Job. My son, notice, son, I only do this for people who belong to me. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord. And so what he's saying there is, when you go into a situation that really puts your faith under pressure and under the test, don't just blow it off. Don't just say, oh, you know, I'm not even going to think about that. He says, it's happening to you for a purpose, for a reason. So look for the hand of God in it. In the difficult situation, in the difficulty of trying to live like a Christian, and maybe you're facing opposition, maybe you're facing persecution, there could be a jillion reasons for you to say, I'm just not going to think very seriously about this. Look for the hand of God. It's always there. He's always doing. How can I tell I'm being disciplined? How can I recognize it? Everything that happens to you is part of his discipline. It could even be a good blessing, a great thing. That's part of his discipline. He says, I just want you to know how good I am. That will develop your faith also, the experience of being blessed by God and having a great time and making a bonus and having a good whatever. That also can build your faith if you recognize that it came from God. But now he's talking to these people that are really in their very difficult situation. He says, look for the hand of God in it. Don't take it lightly. Don't think things just happen to you randomly. Don't think these things happen to you in a vacuum. Whatever you're going through, the hand of God is behind it. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. If the personal trainer tells this person, I want you to do 10 push-ups now, and you get to 8, and he says, you got 2 more to do, and the guy being trained says, forget it. It's too much work. I didn't sign up for this. You fade. You're giving up. He says, don't give up on God. You're going through a difficult time? Hang in there. It's worth it. This is a God of love. And if he knows you can do 10 push-ups, he will give you 10 push-ups. Don't faint. Don't say, you're too hard on me, God. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved of him. Here's the kicker, verse 6. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines. Come on. Put that toothpaste on that brush and brush them. I don't want to. Come on, do it. Why? Because I don't want you to end up with black teeth. I love you. I want you to have the best shiny pearlies ever. Why? I love you. Put it on and brush them. Go through this situation with faith in me. Go through it still believing that I love you, still believing that I'm good, still believing that I'm wise. Don't give up on it, because the people I love are the ones I discipline, because they're the ones I want to develop genuine, real faith. For those whom he loves, he disciplines. What? If you don't love necessarily somebody else's kid in this congregation, but your kid, oh yeah. I don't care what somebody else does with their kid, that's their business. But my kid, the one I love, I want discipline for that child. For those whom the Lord loves, it's a sign of his love, his discipline. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines and he scourges every son whom he receives. Now, that word scourges, that's a pretty serious word. That sounds almost like, that is punishment. All the punishment wasn't taken up on the cross. He's got some left over for me because he scourges me. I take it that the idea of scourging is just the idea of severity. If you've ever seen some of those documentaries on the Navy SEALs about how severe some of the training can be. I remember one guy told me what was really severe to me was 3 o'clock in the morning out on the beach, and they haul up this fire truck with the hose, and it was freezing. The fire knocks you over. It was severe. Why did they do that? Because we hate you guys. No. We want you guys to be able to do something that is very valuable. We are, and in order for you to do what you're called to do, it's got to be this severe. Because there are other guys out there who have gone through severe stuff, and they can take it. And if you can't take it, and they can't, we lose. So the severity of what we're doing to you has a very great purpose. And it's that way with God. I know this hurts. And I know that it feels like scourging almost of punishment. But what I'm doing in your life, in order for you to live a life of real faith, not pretend, not secondhand, of real faith, this is going to be necessary for you to be able to be the kind of person I want you to be. And I want you to be that not so I can have some kind of trophy. I want you to be that because I love you. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines and he scourges every son whom he receives. It's for discipline that you endure. In other words, we say, okay, God, you're wise and you're good and you have that purpose. I will submit to it. I will endure. I'll go through this situation with faith in you and come out on the other side with a refined faith that's even greater than I had before. It's for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father doesn't discipline? Well, the son whose father doesn't discipline him is a son that is not loved by the father. The father who doesn't love his son just lets him, you know, whatever. Good luck. Verse 8, but if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, the difficulties we go through aren't half as bad as the difficulties some other Christians have gone through. But we all partake in whatever degree he sees is best for us. If you were without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you're illegitimate children, and you're not sons. If God doesn't take time out to discipline us, he doesn't care about us. We're not related to him through Jesus Christ. We're just part of the creation that has rejected him. Verse 9, then he draws a comparison between our earthly fathers and God. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Most people can say, of course, there is the case where a person says, no, there's nothing about my father I could respect. But most people can say, you know, he wasn't perfect. And I know he wasn't perfect, but I think he really did his best. Whatever he was really capable of doing, I think he tried to do his best. And to that degree, he really did love me. And so we respect that in earthly fathers because we know none of them were perfect. We had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? Shouldn't we say, I respected my earthly father that didn't know what he was doing. I will submit to your discipline. You're putting me through this situation, forcing me to walk by faith. I will respect you for that. I'll stop complaining about you. I'll stop saying, well, why are you doing this to me? I will not attribute ulterior or inferior or improper motives to you. I will respect you. If I respect this guy that was obviously not perfect, why wouldn't I respect what you, the perfect one, is doing in my life? Verse 10, they, our earthly fathers, disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them. Not perfectly, they just did what they thought that was best. But he, that is God, he disciplines us for a good. He knows what's good for us. And whatever situation he puts us in is, he's not just trying it out to see if it'll work. He knows what's good for us. He disciplines us for our good that we may share in his holiness. That's the ultimate goal. We will share, our faith will grow and grow. Ultimately, we'll share his holiness. Something of his holiness will be seen in our life. That's the ultimate blessing of God. Here, I'm going to let you share a part of what I am, that holiness that I am. Verse 11, all discipline for the moment doesn't seem to be joyful. Of course not. It's sorrowful, of course. Yet to those who have been trained by it, afterward it yields a peaceable fruit of righteousness. That's another aspect of God, his holiness and his righteousness. He says, I want you to participate in that with me. And the only way you get there is by being disciplined, by being trained in your faith. And ultimately, it will usher forth. Oh, I love that. It will usher forth. Now I share in the holiness of God. I share in his righteousness. Look at the trail that brought me here. But would I trade it? Would I go back? No, you always knew what you were doing. And I love you for it. Therefore, verse 12, people who are struggling because you know what God is doing. He's disciplining you. When? How do I recognize it? In everything. You can just assume. In all of the good times and all of the bad times, because he never stops being our loving Father. He's always disciplining us. Encourage one another with that. Verse 12, therefore, strengthen the hands that are weak and the knees that are feeble. Those people are saying, I hate this. This is difficult. God is mean. Blah. You know better. Help them with this information. And make straight paths for your feet, so that the limb which is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. In other words, it's like a person walking, trying to reach a goal, and they have weak knees. If you learn that God is disciplining you, okay, I can take it. This loving God, it will give you strength. And he's saying, strengthen other people who are beginning to doubt whether God's even good at all, why he would put them through that. How do you recognize that you're being disciplined? Just look what's going on, whether it's good or difficult. God is always training us, moving us toward greater and purer faith in him, because he is our loving Father who never stops being our loving Father. Do you have any question about anything I've said? Has anything been unclear or something that just you'd like to say, what do you mean by this? Or you might have a comment that supports the thesis of this passage, that a loving father does discipline his children. Either a question or a comment that you'd like to make. Nope, just let us go. Okay. Please stand for a benediction. We invite you, as always, to room 2, that's on the level just below this, to observe Holy Communion, where once again we receive from God the promise of his love for us. Let's pray.